When was the last time you found yourself captivated by a beautiful face, moved by a stunning landscape, or puzzled by a piece of modern art? These experiences, so central to human existence, have traditionally been the domain of philosophers and artists. Yet in The Aesthetic Brain, neuroscientist Anjan Chatterjee boldly ventures where many scientists fear to tread, into the neural foundations of beauty, pleasure, and art. This groundbreaking work, which has been featured in publications from Scientific American to the New York Times, bridges the divide between humanities and sciences, offering a revolutionary perspective on why we find certain things beautiful and how our brains process aesthetic experiences. As philosopher Alain de Botton noted, this book finally brings scientific rigor to questions that have fascinated humanity since Plato. Let's explore how our evolutionary past shapes our aesthetic present and why understanding the brain's response to beauty might reveal something profound about what makes us human. Beauty captivates us universally. We're drawn to it, go to great lengths to attain it, and find ourselves delighted, inspired, or even sent into despair by it. But what exactly is beauty? Is it a property of things in the world or something that exists in our minds? The question ultimately collapses on itself. Evolutionary psychology teaches us that mind and world are deeply integrated. Our minds are sculpted by nature and tightly coupled to our environment. We cannot understand the structure of our minds without considering properties of the world. Our brains respond automatically to beauty, particularly facial beauty, even when we're not consciously thinking about it. In fMRI studies, specific brain regions like the fusiform face area, FFA, and lateral occipital cortex, LOC, respond more vigorously to attractive faces, while areas like the parahippocampal place area, PPA, show no change. When consciously judging beauty, additional parietal and frontal regions activate for decision-making. The reward circuitry, including the nucleus accumbens and orbitofrontal cortex, responds to attractive faces even when focusing on unrelated features like face roundness. This suggests our brains might constantly register beauty, giving us little jolts of pleasure even when we're concentrating on other things. Beauty creates a halo effect, where attractive people are unconsciously attributed positive qualities. Studies show attractive children are considered more intelligent and honest by teachers, while attractive adults are viewed as more competent leaders who get jobs more easily and earn more money. People are more likely to help attractive individuals and judge them less harshly for wrongdoing. The brain areas that classify objects, like faces and bodies, also evaluate them aesthetically. This suggests our brains don't clearly separate classification from evaluation when processing beauty. The very act of perceiving something beautiful is intertwined with experiencing pleasure from it. What makes a face beautiful? Early attempts to measure facial beauty were often contaminated with racial and cultural biases. European standards held white features as the ideal, with figures like Dutch artist Petrus Camper ranking facial beauty according to how closely profiles matched Greek statues, placing European features above East Asian and African features. This facial angle theory, developed in the 18th century, exemplified how pseudoscience was used to justify racial hierarchies, a practice that unfortunately persisted well into the 20th century. Setting aside these prejudices, three fundamental parameters contribute to facial attractiveness that aren't specific to any ethnicity: averageness, symmetry, and sexual dimorphism. Averageness was discovered serendipitously by Francis Galton in the 1880s, who found composite faces more attractive than individual ones. By overlaying multiple photographs, he created faces that represented the mathematical average of many individuals. Modern studies using computer morphing have confirmed this preference for average features, suggesting it may signal genetic diversity and health in potential mates. The average hypothesis has been tested across cultures, from indigenous tribes to urban populations, consistently showing similar results. Symmetrical faces are universally preferred, as demonstrated in numerous studies of identical twins, where the more symmetrical twin was consistently judged more attractive. Research using sophisticated facial mapping technology has shown that even subtle asymmetries can affect perceived attractiveness. Symmetry indicates developmental stability and resistance to parasites, essentially advertising good genes. Studies have found that people with more symmetrical faces tend to have better physical and mental health outcomes, suggesting this preference has evolutionary advantages. Sexual dimorphism refers to gender-based differences in appearance. Men consistently prefer feminized features in women that signal fertility and youth, large eyes, full lips, small noses, and smooth skin, combined with signs of maturity like high cheekbones. While averaged female faces are considered attractive, successful models often display exaggerated feminine features, what researchers call supernormal stimuli. These features may trigger stronger mate selection responses than average faces. Women's preferences for male faces are more complex and context-dependent, with physical appearance typically ranking lower in importance than for men's mate selection criteria. Women generally prefer masculinized faces, square jaws, heavy brows, and prominent cheekbones, but not excessively so, as overly masculine features can suggest high testosterone levels and dominant behavior that might not translate to relationship commitment. Fascinatingly, women's preferences shift during their menstrual cycle, with more masculine men preferred for short-term relationships when ovulating, a pattern that appears even in isolated groups with limited exposure to Western media. This hormonal influence on mate preference has been documented across diverse cultures, suggesting it's a fundamental aspect of human psychology rather than a cultural construct. Recent research has also revealed that facial preferences can be influenced by environmental factors such as resource availability, social status, and even population density, demonstrating the complex interplay between biology and environment in determining what we consider beautiful. Kenneth Clark observed that whenever we criticize a human figure, we reveal our innate sense of ideal physical beauty. This concept of bodily beauty as proper proportion dates back to ancient Greece, with Galen arguing that an arm 3 hand lengths long was more beautiful than other proportions. As with faces, symmetry is crucial for bodily attractiveness. Men with symmetrical body parts are considered more attractive, begin sexual activity earlier, have more partners, and are rated as better lovers. Similarly, women with symmetrical features are considered more attractive and more fertile. Sexual dimorphism drives bodily attraction. Height matters significantly for men, with taller men enjoying advantages in many areas. The ideal male torso has a V shape with broad shoulders and narrow hips. For women, estrogen deposits fat in breasts, buttocks, and thighs, features that significantly impact men's attention. Men are particularly drawn to breasts, preferring those that are firm and upward tilting regardless of size, as these signal youth and fertility. Cultural factors interact with universal preferences. In developed countries with abundant food, slender women are preferred, while in resource-scarce environments, heavier women are considered more attractive, the environmental security hypothesis. Regardless of weight preferences, men consistently prefer women with hourglass figures and waist-to-hip ratios around 0.70, a shape signaling fertility. While people generally orient to faces more than bodies, men look more at bodies for short-term relationships and faces for long-term partnerships. Movement also matters in attraction. From simple point-light displays of joints in motion, we can identify gender, age, and emotional states. Dance serves as a courtship ritual across species, with movement exaggerating attractive physical features. Women find symmetrical men's movements more attractive, especially when ovulating, while men with higher prenatal testosterone exposure, indicated by longer ring fingers, are rated as better dancers. Unlike human beauty, landscape preferences can't be explained by averageness or sexual selection. yet we evolved powerful emotional responses to certain environments, particularly those that improved our ancestors' survival chances. This evolutionary heritage shapes our aesthetic responses to natural scenes in profound and measurable ways, influencing everything from art to architecture. The parahippocampal place area, PPA, responds specifically to landscapes and environments, working with the retrosplenial cortex, RSC, to organize spatial navigation. While the PPA represents directly viewed scenes regardless of familiarity, the RSC activates more strongly with familiar places, suggesting its role in scene memory retrieval. This dual processing system allows us to both appreciate new landscapes and form deep emotional connections to familiar places, explaining why we can be moved by both exotic vistas and childhood haunts. Neuroscientists found that beautiful landscapes activate both the right PPA and the ventral striatum more vigorously than less attractive scenes, similar to the neural pattern seen with beautiful faces. This suggests the visual cortex both classifies and evaluates scenes, coordinating with reward systems. The intensity of activation correlates strongly with subjective ratings of landscape beauty, indicating a direct link between neural activity and aesthetic appreciation. Our landscape preferences follow predictable patterns across cultures and generations. We consistently prefer savanna-like environments with scattered trees, open spaces, water features, and vantage points, even without prior exposure to such landscapes. These preferences make evolutionary sense. Trees provided food and escape routes, open spaces allowed predator detection, water was essential for survival, and vantage points offered strategic advantages. Studies show that even urban dwellers who've never seen savannas instinctively prefer photographs of such environments, particularly those featuring the specific tree shapes characteristic of African savannas. Cultural influences build upon these universal biases in fascinating ways. Japanese gardens emphasize meandering paths and hidden views, creating anticipation and mystery, while incorporating essential elements like water features and carefully pruned trees. English gardens create idealized pastoral scenes with rolling lawns and strategically placed copses, exemplifying the human desire for both prospect and refuge. Chinese gardens balance elements of yin and yang through careful arrangement of rocks and water. Both enhance natural beauty through human intervention, creating peak shift effects that exaggerate attractive landscape features. These garden traditions demonstrate how culture can elaborate upon our innate preferences without contradicting them, resulting in design spaces that satisfy both our evolutionary instincts and culturally refined tastes. Modern landscape architecture continues to reflect these ancient preferences, with successful public spaces often incorporating elements that would have appealed to our ancestors: open sight lines, scattered trees, water features, and elevated viewing areas. Even in highly urbanized environments, the most popular parks and public spaces tend to mirror these ancestral preferences, suggesting that our evolutionary heritage continues to shape our aesthetic choices in the modern world. Numbers evoke profound aesthetic responses despite their abstract nature. Throughout history, civilizations have ascribed deep meaning to numbers. The Pythagoreans saw one as the generator of all things, two as feminine, three as masculine, four as justice, and 10 as perfection. Ancient Chinese culture considered 8 lucky and 4 unlucky, while Islamic geometric patterns often feature 8 pointed stars representing cosmic harmony. Mathematics possesses what Bertrand Russell called supreme beauty, cold and austere, like sculpture, yet sublimely pure. This beauty manifests through patterns pervading nature and through the elegant behaviors of numbers themselves. Prime numbers, for instance, exhibit mysterious distributions that have fascinated mathematicians for millennia. The prime spiral, when graphed, reveals unexpected geometric patterns that hint at hidden mathematical order. The golden ratio, phi, 1.618033988... exemplifies mathematical beauty. This irrational number appears when a line is divided, so the ratio of the whole to the longer segment equals the ratio of the longer to shorter segment. Phi has remarkable properties. Squaring it gives 2.618039..., while its reciprocal is 0.618039.... It's intimately connected to the Fibonacci sequence, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, where successive ratios increasingly approximate phi. Artists throughout history, from Leonardo da Vinci to Salvador Dali, have incorporated these proportions into their works. Phi and Fibonacci numbers appear throughout nature with remarkable frequency. In leaf arrangements, phyllotaxis, petal counts, lilies have 3, buttercups 5, delphiniums 8, spiral patterns of sunflower florets, nautilus shells, ram's horns, hurricanes, and galaxies. These patterns minimize energy in natural systems, as demonstrated by experiments with magnetic fluids that naturally arrange at the golden angle, 137.5 degrees, when seeking equilibrium. DNA molecules measure 34 angstroms long by 21 angstroms wide for each full cycle of the double helix, numbers in the Fibonacci sequence. Beautiful mathematics is revolutionary, succinct, surprising, and generalizable. Euler's identity, e to the I pi plus 1 equals 0, is considered by many mathematicians the most beautiful theorem because it succinctly links five fundamental mathematical constants, e, I, pi, 1, and 0, using each basic arithmetic operation exactly once. Other examples include the elegant proof that 2 is irrational and Euler's solution to the Königsberg bridge problem, which birthed graph theory. The neuroscience of mathematics reveals specialized brain regions for processing numbers. Damage to the left posterior parietal lobe can cause dyscalculia, inability to perform simple arithmetic. The intraparietal sulci activate when approximating quantities, while the left inferior parietal cortex handles abstract symbolic calculations. Recent studies using fMRI have shown that contemplating elegant mathematical formulas activate the same brain regions as viewing beautiful artwork or listening to music. Though no studies have specifically examined the neuroaesthetics of math, we observe coordination between these regions and reward centers, producing what Russell called cold and austere beauty, a liking response rather than desire. This suggests that mathematical beauty may be hardwired into our neural architecture, reflecting deep truths about the universe's structure. Like cats, true hedonists, humans experience countless pleasures. Food, sex, sunsets, winning, napping, accomplishing goals, music, dancing, laughing, learning. These pleasures often seduce us into setting aside rational thought, leading us to make impulsive decisions that prioritize immediate gratification over long-term benefits. Our pleasure-seeking is deeply evolutionary. Ancestors who found pleasure in survival-enhancing objects produced more offspring. This explains why high-calorie foods are particularly rewarding, as they were rare and valuable in our evolutionary past. The distinction between liking, pleasure from objects, and wanting, desire for objects, represents a crucial division in our reward system. These systems typically work together, but can become uncoupled, as seen in various behavioral disorders. Neuroscientist Kent Berridge demonstrated this separation in rats, which show characteristic facial expressions when they like something, tongue protrusions, lip licking, versus disliking it, gaping, head shaking. These same expressions appear in human infants, suggesting deep evolutionary roots of pleasure responses. Liking, our core pleasure experience, engages the nucleus accumbens and ventral striatum through mu opioid and cannabinoid receptors. This system creates the fundamental sensation of pleasure, from the taste of chocolate to the warmth of social connection. Wanting, meanwhile, is driven by dopamine neurons interspersed among these liking neurons. When these systems uncouple, as with opiate-blocking drugs or in addiction, we can want without liking or like without wanting. This explains why addicts often continue seeking drugs even when they no longer derive pleasure from them. Our cortical systems interact with these deeper reward structures, allowing humans control over desires rather than being slaves to them. The orbitofrontal cortex, ventromedial prefrontal cortex, amygdala, anterior insula, and anterior cingulate coordinate with dorsolofrontal cortices to strategically pursue or inhibit pleasure. This sophisticated network enables us to delay gratification, resist temptation, and pursue long-term goals over immediate rewards. For example, dieters can override the pleasure of dessert, and students can choose studying over socializing. Rewards drive learning through prediction errors, mismatches between expected and experienced pleasure. Dopamine neurons increase firing when rewards exceed expectations and decrease when rewards fall short, helping us constantly recalibrate. This learning happens rapidly, within milliseconds, and often unconsciously. For instance, if a coffee tastes better than expected, dopamine surge helps strengthen the memory of where we bought it, influencing future choices. Pleasure and learning create a reverberating cycle. Pleasure helps us learn, while learning itself generates pleasure. This cognitive pleasure may explain our enjoyment of conceptual art and problem solving. Even babies show facial expressions of concentration when puzzled and delight when solving problems. This intrinsic reward system for learning helps explain human curiosity and our species' remarkable capacity for innovation. From crossword puzzles to scientific discoveries, the pleasure of solving problems has driven human advancement throughout history. The interaction between pleasure and social behavior is particularly fascinating. Social rewards activate similar neurocircuits as physical pleasures, explaining why positive social interactions can be as rewarding as food or other primary rewards. This system underlies our deeply social nature and the pleasure we derive from cooperation, friendship, and love. Art saturates our world, from neighborhood murals and gallery exhibitions to children's refrigerator drawings and ancient cave paintings dating back 30,000 years. This ubiquity across time and cultures suggests art might be vital to human existence, perhaps even a biological imperative hardwired in our brains. Yet this biological view clashes with the conception of art as cultural artifact, the idea that art, as we understand it, emerged from 18th century European philosophical thought. Historically, distinctions between art and craft were meaningless, and artists primarily served religious and aristocratic patrons until democratic institutions like public galleries emerged alongside the growing middle class. This false dichotomy caricatures both biology and culture. Our brains are plastic, changing as we learn and develop skills. Meanwhile, culture emerges from collectives of human brains and influences them in return. The relationship is bidirectional and complex. Do we have an instinct for art? This question divides scholars into two camps: those who see art as fundamental to human nature, and those who view it merely as a byproduct of other adaptations. The art as instinct position argues art serves adaptive purposes, while the art as byproduct view, championed by Gould, Lewontin, and Pinker, suggests art is merely cheesecake for our minds, a delightful but purposeless pleasure derived from mental faculties evolved for other reasons. Perhaps art is neither purely instinctual nor merely a byproduct. Is art an instinct like the peacock's tail, or more like the Bengalese finch's song? While the peacock's tail evolved through intense selective pressure as a costly display of fitness, the Bengalese finch's song evolved in the opposite direction, through relaxed selective pressures. Domesticated from the white-rumped Munia, the Bengalese finch developed more complex, variable songs precisely when singing ability became irrelevant to reproduction. Art follows this finch model rather than the peacock's tail. When freed from tight selective pressures, whether adaptive functions of beauty or social cohesion, art blossoms in variety. Like the Finch's song, art is complex, variable, and exquisitely responsive to cultural environments. Revolutionary art emerges during transitions when oppressive regimes begin losing control, when selective pressures start relaxing. In severely oppressive societies, art becomes stereotyped and propagandistic, while open societies produce diverse artistic expressions. Our experience of beauty emerges from a loose ensemble of evolutionary adaptations, each contributing to our complex aesthetic sensibilities. These adaptations developed over millions of years, serving both survival and reproductive functions. For instance, our preference for facial averageness evolved as a reliable indicator of genetic diversity and health, with studies showing that composite faces created by averaging multiple individuals are consistently rated as more attractive than individual faces. Sexual dimorphism markers, such as pronounced jawlines in men or higher cheekbones in women, became aesthetic preferences because they advertised reproductive fitness and hormonal health. Symmetry preference appears across cultures and extends beyond face perception to architecture, design, and art. This adaptation likely emerged from our need to quickly process and categorize visual information, as symmetrical objects are computationally easier to recognize and remember. Our attraction to certain landscapes, particularly savanna-like environments with scattered trees and open spaces, reflects our species' evolutionary history, where such environments provided both resources and safety. This explains why similar landscape preferences appear across cultures and why parks and gardens often mirror these natural configurations. The distinction between liking and wanting neural systems provides fascinating insight into aesthetic experience. The liking system, centered in the nucleus accumbens and other pleasure centers, operates independently from the wanting system, which drives motivation and desire. This separation allows us to appreciate beauty without necessarily wanting to possess it, creating what philosophers call disinterested interest. This biological framework helps explain how we can be moved by tragic art or find beauty in challenging or even disturbing works. Art produces intricate emotional compositions that transcend simple pleasure-pain responses. A single artwork might simultaneously evoke awe through its scale, fear through its subject matter, passion through its execution, and contemplation through its meaning. These complex emotional responses engage multiple neural networks, from the amygdala's fear processing to the prefrontal cortex's analytical functions. Rather than having a single art instinct, humans possess a constellation of cognitive and perceptual abilities that enable artistic behavior. This includes pattern recognition, symbolic thinking, and emotional processing. Art emerges as a chimera, a hybrid phenomenon combining various evolutionary adaptations, architectural byproducts, spandrels, and repurposed capabilities, exaptations. Cultural development has further shaped these basic capacities, creating the rich diversity of artistic expressions we see across societies and historical periods. The serendipitous nature of aesthetic experience explains art's endless capacity to surprise and transform our perspective. When experiencing a Monet landscape, a Renaissance portrait, or a piece of contemporary installation art, we're engaging with a phenomenon that bridges our evolutionary heritage and cultural sophistication. Our aesthetic experiences activate multiple brain systems in intricate coordination, from basic visual processing to complex emotional and cognitive responses. This scientific understanding enhances rather than reduces art's mystery and power. It reveals beauty and artistic appreciation as fundamental aspects of human nature, deeply embedded in our neural architecture and evolutionary history. Our aesthetic capacity, this ability to find profound meaning in patterns, proportions, and cultural creations, stands as a defining characteristic of human consciousness, reflecting both our biological heritage and our unique ability to transcend purely adaptive functions.